Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is All Atheists Have a Voice, and my name's Perry, better known as Atheist Human. And I just wanted to let you know a little bit about what our station's about. All religion, my friend, is simply evolved out of fraud, fear, greed, imagination, and poetry. It's Edgar Allan Poe. No atheist should be afraid to say, I am an atheist. I talk to atheists all over the world that have a difficult time coming out as an atheist. Some will be murdered if they do. Others would be shunned or disowned by their families. Even in the USA, it's illegal in some states for atheists to hold office. This is a crime. We need to stick together, and we need to help others like ourselves to embrace their atheism. We ask atheists to tell their personal stories of how they came to atheism and how they deal with the blowback of trying to be open about their atheism. Our stories can help others make that leap of unfaith. And my guest today is Sarah Green, and she is the, tell me if I'm wrong, Sarah, Tennessee Regional Director for American Atheists. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
Cool beans. And what do you guys do?
Well, American Atheists serves as advocates in the public and especially the political sphere for atheists. You'll see us a lot in the news, or more specifically, you'll see my boss, David Silverman, in the news, pushing back on political issues in favor of atheists. We will end up at rallies to take down the Ten Commandments monuments that will end up on public lands, things like that. And that's effectively what we do, baseline, is advocate for atheists in America.
Cool. And how's that been going?
Here in Tennessee, it's I've been working with American Atheists for a little over a year now as the regional director. And we've got new groups popping up all the time, new affiliate groups. American Atheists actually has affiliate groups as opposed to state chapters, and we have four of those in the state. But we've also got a number of outlying groups popping up as well. You've got people organizing new groups, organizing new conferences, one that I am involved in, organizing right now called NanoCon that will take place in Nashville the beginning of March. And it's actually, we're gaining momentum all the time. Politically, more and more people are coming out all the time out of the closet as atheists. More and more people are identifying in surveys, like you'll see the Pew Research surveys come up all the time, with more and more people identifying as non-religious. Not necessarily all of them atheists, but I'd be willing to wager that a lot more people are atheists than actually identify as atheists in those surveys.
Okay. So you do surveys and other types of things? I mean, do you put on events other than the one you're putting on, or how does it work?
Well,
are there get-togethers or...
Well, American Atheists, as I said, there are affiliate groups that that pop up throughout the states, not just in Tennessee, but in any, in, I think just about every state in the union, we have affiliate groups. What they'll be either, for example, we have the Memphis Freethought Alliance in Memphis. They are primarily focused on education. They do a lot of speaking engagements at their local library in Memphis. Whereas here in Nashville, we have Nashville Secular Life, which, yes, you'll have something akin to an educational thing, but you'll also have bowling nights or karaoke nights or let's go out and drink and have some pizza nights. You know, there are meetings like this taking place all over the state. We have book clubs. We have Nashville Sunday Assembly. Now, not necessarily all of these groups are affiliated with American Atheists, but there's quite a bit of overlap in our membership, I would say, and in the people that who, I guess, matriculate like we all kind of run in the same circles. So you've got Nashville Sunday Assembly, which is what some people will refer to as Atheist Church. If you've ever heard of Jerry DeWitt, he is involved in something similar. It is not necessarily Sunday Assembly, but it is something similar where it's just a time of fellowship for people to get together. We sing songs. I've been to several of the Nashville Sunday Assemblies. I think they're wonderful. Every now and again, they'll have a really unique speaker. For example, one of the times that I went, one of the music professors from the local university, Vanderbilt, came out and he played some Mozart for us. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman was actually religious, but he felt completely comfortable coming and hanging out with a bunch of non-believers and sharing his talent with us. And it was a really good experience. And that those types of groups, it's all along the spectrum from social, political, where you'll find atheists organizing. And it's becoming more and more apparent to me in the South how many of us there really are. Because you've got groups popping up in little towns like the little town that I graduated high school from. It's a little town called Sparta, Tennessee. And you can't get there via interstate. You have to get off of the interstate and take several state highways and a back road to get to it. And there are even groups popping up in these little towns. So there are more and more of us cropping up all over the place.
That sounds like fun, man. And I like reaching out to the community, too. You know, even though I'm not a theist or we're not theists, we're atheists, doesn't mean that we can't embrace the arts and other things that theists do. I mean, we don't have to embrace the religiosity to be able to take advantage of the benefits, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, one of the things that groups like Sunday Assembly or I believe it's called the Oasis out in Nebraska, in Omaha, these groups are attempting to sort of reclaim the word fellowship from theists, because there's been this sort of long-running idea that theism has a monopoly on gathering together. Like, for mm-hmm. whatever reason, we've gotten it into our heads that if you get two or three or more people together, that it somehow has to take on a religious tone. So you've got this herding cats analogy where, you know, atheists want to go off and do their own thing, and that certainly can be the case sometimes, but we're still social animals, and we were social animals long before religion ever came into the picture. So mm-hmm. a lot of these groups that sort of hinge on the fellowship aspect and the we're going to get together and sing songs and we're going to have a potluck, you know, those kinds of things, the sort of things that especially here in the South that a lot of people have had to leave behind once they make their deconversion and once they actually come out, a lot of that goes away. A lot of that support structure goes away. And these fellowships, the assemblies, are attempting to step in and fill that gap, and they actually do it quite nicely. For example, the Sunday Assembly in Nashville, it's one of my favorite groups of people that I've ever met. They're a lot of fun. I actually work with one of the gentlemen who's in the band. And
cool.
It's really a nice experience. Now, I don't go often, and it's not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but I would definitely recommend somebody, if there is a Sunday Assembly near you, you should definitely check it out at least once. And if you don't end up going back necessarily to the service, quote unquote, the fellowship mm-hmm. service that they'll normally have on
everyone's
a Sunday,
tea,
which,
but I would definitely recommend Sunday. Somebody, if there is a Sunday Assembly near you, you should definitely check it out.
I think that would be great. We have one here. I haven't been to it yet. at our ethical society. And I think that's kind of the mainstream here for us. They have a Sunday get-together, and I think that would be cool because, especially for new atheists in particular, it's a good place to talk to other people and to find out, you know, how they're dealing with it, going through it. Like you and I were talking earlier, I think it's even a crime that we even have to have this discussion, and we have to hide our atheism, and you know, we can't just be who we are. It's insane to me. But groups such as yours and events. Now, what's that event that's coming up again?
Okay, it's called NanoCon. It's NanoCon.
Okay.
NanoCon, and it's the Nashville Nuns Conference. And it's something that I sort of accidentally got involved in. Somebody, one of my friends, who's actually a podcaster here in the local area, his name's Cass Midgley, he does the Everyone's Agnostic podcast out of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is just south of Nashville. He had requested, you know, if anybody wanted to volunteer their help, if anybody wanted to try and make this happen, to contact one of the women actually involved with Sunday Assembly, a wonderful woman named Brenda. And I got in touch with her, and she was like, well, why didn't we tap you before? So it just kind of snowballed through there, and now we have a venue, we have a date. My boss, David Silverman, is going to be giving the keynote speech. It's going to be a one-day con, just 12:30 to, I'm going to put question mark because Phil Ferguson is coming by, and he's going to be our DJ for our dance party afterwards. So who knows? We tend to party
cool.
a lot, but it's going, like I said, it's going to run 12:30 to later on that Saturday. It's March 5th of 2016. You can register online. We'll be having, we'll have our website up soon, but we're at facebook.com/nanocon3000 right now, and we're updating constantly. So you'll constantly be seeing our updates, well, once the website goes live, when you can register online. We'll have our list of speakers, the sponsors, who will be tabling the event. Now, it is going to be a one-day event, but it's going to be cram-packed. And we're all really excited. I'm so excited and so honored to be a part of it because it's going to be the first one of its kind here in Nashville.
Cool. Now, if I'm going to give people your Twitter address, okay? So if they got any questions,
absolutely,
they can. Okay, good. It's Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, H, Green, G-R-E-E-N, @TN_Heretic with a capital H. H-E-R-E-T-I-C. And
yes.
I'm sure if you contact Sarah, yeah, she'll be glad to help you out with anything. Now, how about a little bit about you? How did you, you know, how did you come to atheism, and what kind of blowback do you get? I mean, you're out in the spotlight all the time, so, you know, that it's a little different for you, but you still had to go through the same pace as anybody else did, right?
Well, for me, it was a really long and really rocky journey. I grew up in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee on a Southern Baptist Associational campground. My father was the property manager. So I grew up very heavily involved with the Southern Baptist Church. And I always have to preface this by saying that time from birth to about the age of 9, there was no problem there. I had a blast. I was camping every summer. I was having snowball fights and sledding. And the religion, honestly, with my parents being so busy with actually running the day-to-day operations of the campground, it kind of took a back burner. Like, we went to church every now and again, and, you know, we took part in the services, but when I did take part in the services, it was always focused on the happiness, the joy of being together, you know, being with our family members and rejoicing in the love of God. It wasn't until we moved from East Tennessee to West Tennessee to Memphis when my father got another position that I really actually started to question things. And the thing that started it all was actually my parents making the statement to me that God had specifically told them what to do. And in my 9-year-old brain, the first question that came up was, well, why didn't he tell me? If this is so important, if it's so big, if it's changing everything, why wasn't I at least informed? And that one little tiny silly question from a 9-year-old is what started that sort of domino effect. And I went through probably a good 6 years of bouncing back and forth between, I'm not going to say not believing, but really extreme doubt to extreme devoutness, like trying to constantly come back in and get rebaptized and get rededicated to Christ. Because at 13 years old, I was having a little bit of an existential crisis because I was starting to doubt these things that you're always told are firm, they're concrete. This is the way things are. And I had a lot of trouble with that. But by the time I was 15, I had completely done away with belief. However, I stayed in the closet for almost another 15 years. It's only in the last couple of years that I have actually come out to my family, to friends, and actually gotten involved in the community. And part of that was because of the involvement that my family has had so deeply within the Southern Baptist Convention. I didn't want to affect their position is what it came down to, is I didn't want to have to drag them, no matter what sort of decisions I made, I didn't want to have to drag them along with me, whatever rocky road I went down. Because one of the best things that one of my friends has said to me was that I'm the one that came out. My family didn't. It was rough. I will say the first person that I came out to, my older brother, Andrew, who is still a believer, but he is a different sort of theist than what you would think of. He is definitely more thoughtful and more doubtful, I would say, because he's in a constant state of reexamining himself just because of the type of person he is. But he has been the most supportive person, and this includes my atheist friends as well. My brother has been the most supportive person in this whole journey for me, because he appreciates me being honest to myself. And that is something that I never would have expected or could have asked for. I couldn't ask for a better brother. The rest of the family, however, one out of 24 ain't bad, I guess, if you include the extended family. It's been a bit of a bumpy ride, I guess, because it's always hard, I would imagine, as a parent. I don't have children myself. When a child comes to you and tells you that they believe something that is directly opposed to your belief, and it's not been easy on that personal level. However, I have found at least one other person in the family that is an atheist, so that I consider that a bonus, that I'm not the only black sheep, so to speak. And I'm sure that there are more of us in hiding, especially in the younger generations, like younger cousins and whatnot. I'm sure there are more of them there than even I realize. As far as, like, publicly, I have honestly not gotten a lot of blowback. I have had to deal with a little bit of online harassment through email and through Facebook for I'm constantly writing letters to the editor for of the local newspaper here is the Tennessean, and I'm apparently a thorn in somebody's side because they've gotten to where they are aggressively editing my letters to the editor.
Oh my gosh!
But it's
what
okay.
What happened to the First Amendment?
I figure that means that I'm getting somewhere, that I'm touching a nerve. But
right.
As far as like face to face, personally, I've not ever had somebody come up to me on the street. I'm not very recognizable, even in the atheist community. There are some people who didn't even realize that I was involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not as big of a name as some of the people in the movement, like David Silverman. You know,
right?
David Silverman has made a name for himself being the firebrand that he is, and he is amazing. There's nobody else that is better equipped or better suited to be at the head of American Atheists. He's amazing. He's a wonderful man. And I know that sometimes he comes off as kind of an asshole. I've had several people complain about David. And the thing of it is we do have plenty of people who want to take, I guess what you might call a more tactful route, or something like that, but we do have to have our heavy hitters, and David is one of those heavy hitters. I mean, he really is a guy that you want to have in your corner when it comes down to it, when it comes down to this thing. So that man has earned a name for himself. I am just now getting onto my feet in Tennessee. Now, it is things in the South move slow.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows this. So, unfortunately, it's a long game that we're kind of playing, but with that long game comes the perk that I haven't really had to deal too much with, I suppose, strangers harassing me over my atheism. On a personal level and sometimes in the workplace, yes. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's been... And in that sense, it can be... I don't want to say more damaging, but more frustrating, because it's easier to let some random person, it's easier to just let whatever they say go. Some random person on Facebook, some random person on Twitter. It's easier to let things go when it's somebody that you don't know. But when it's somebody that, you know, you either respect or and or care about in your personal life, it becomes harder to deal with when you're butting heads with them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas getting into an argument online with another faceless profile, it doesn't necessarily always carry the same weight. So I've been lucky in that I haven't had to deal with a whole lot of public backlash as of yet, but I'm certainly doing all I can to garner attention down here. But I have had to deal more with on the personal level of having arguments and having to try and balance being fair to your loved ones with being honest with yourself. And
mm-hmm.
it's a really fine line that a lot of us have to walk.
Yeah, and that was one of my issues, that the reason I started this is because of that fine line, and I use pretty strong words like crime. I think it's a a crime that we have to watch our backs, that we have to tiptoe around subjects, that we have to pretend like, yes, 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 we're part of the club. And we can't just say who we are. I think it's just ludicrous. But that's the way it is. And we have to deal with it. And you're right, it's the long haul. And it's one person at a time talking to another person that's going to get all this changed. And I don't think it's going to be with debating theists that have circular logic, and well, I can't even call it logic, circular arguments, and really aren't interested in sharing or learning. They are just interested in debating. And it doesn't make a difference what evidence we put in front of them or what logic we put in front of them. They are blind to it because of this blind faith. And we fortunately are free of it. And that's how I feel. I feel free. And at the same time, trapped. I can't, I use an alias because I don't want the blowback to come on my wife, you know, with all this. But if it was just me, it would be a different story. Sarah Green, I would be out there with you.
Well, no, so. See, I understand that because for the longest time as it was, it weighed pretty heavily on me for, I can't involve anybody in this because it's not just me, it's anybody else who happens to be related to me. And it got to the point for me, and because I'm unmarried, I have no children, I have two cats. So, you know, it is easier for me because I don't have those attachments. But at the same time, it's vital for me to be as visible as possible to as many people as possible, not just atheists, but to theists as well, to the larger public. It is very vital for me to, at the very least, be visible in order for the other people who can't quite come out yet to have that tether, you know.
Absolutely.
That point, I guess, like a touchstone to where it's, I can get there one day. Do I want as many people to come out of the closet as possible, as quickly as possible? Yes. And I will always recommend to anyone who asks my advice, come out as soon as possible, as soon as you can. Don't do what I did. Don't wait 15 years. You know, and don't wait 5 if you can. If you can manage it. If you can do that, if you are self-sufficient, you know, if you are able to do that for yourself, come out as soon as you can. Because there are probably going to be hurt feelings in a lot of cases, not necessarily all, because there have been cases where people have come out to their parents and their parents have been either indifferent or it turns out that the parents have been atheists as well. So it's not always the horror stories that we hear, but in the event of a blow up and in the event of an argument, that is going to pass, and it is honestly kind of like ripping a Band-Aid off. The quicker you do it, the quicker you guys are going to be over it. The quicker you can. Start to build a relationship without the religion. So I will always recommend and ask that people, if they feel confident in coming out, please do that, because your neighbor sees you. You know, you're the secretary that runs the front desk at your office. She sees you. You know, these people that you never would have imagined will eventually start coming out to you once you make that step. And that's, once again, what I've been finding out more and more is the more open, the more brazen I am with my atheism, the more people I find that are on the same page. Now, they may not quite be ready to call themselves atheists yet, but they're there. They are at that point where they have given up religion. They have given up a belief in God. And they're ready to sort of involve themselves in humanity for humanity's sake.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to having to follow the rules that somebody else set down for them. So I am a huge supporter of Openly Secular. I was actually interviewed for the Tennessean. Oh, good grief, it's been over a year now, the story ran. As somebody who is participating in the Openly Secular campaign, like I am, and it's gotten to the point to where it gets dropped on the first date, you know? I don't toe around it. Because, especially with me being involved in the community, and I love this community. I am the biggest fangirl of the atheist community that there is. So, me being involved in that community, it is really important for me to be upfront and honest about that. And it's not to wave it in somebody's face or anything like that. It's just, this is a big part of my life. So I have to be honest with everybody about it. I put myself in a position where I can't not be honest. I must, you know, and I really enjoy it. I enjoy talking to people. I will be honest with you when we were having our American Atheist Convention in Memphis last year, I ended up talking to a few of the local business people. And one of the women I talked to was actually a woman who ran a Jewish cultural center down there. And she is herself culturally Jewish. And she was like, well, you know, my family has been skeptics since way back in the day. She was like, I just call myself a Jew because it sounds nice in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you've also got a lot of people like that who are culturally identifying as
right.
a religion, as opposed to really, I guess, digging into the meat of it. Like, there are plenty of people in my generation. I'm 31. I technically fall into the millennial generation. I feel like
right.
I shouldn't, but I do. There are plenty of people in my generation who identify as spiritual but not religious, which doesn't
right.
really have any sort of real explanation behind it. And then you'll find people who just sort of, they don't commit themselves. And that number is growing all the time. The younger you go, the less of us believe. So the internet has raised a bunch of bullshit detectors at this point, basically. The internet has been one of our greatest allies. It really has.
Right.
It has been a place for us to gather when, you know, nobody would take our money to let us have a venue. And it's become a really important part of the community. So,
that is
sort of, I think that's the first soft landing place for a lot of people is to either reach out on YouTube or to go to the podcast. And then the step after that is to find the meetups. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, maybe go out to a Sunday assembly or maybe go out to bowling night. And then the step after that is to start coming out. Now, you don't have to start coming out to everybody all at the same time. My coming out process, and it will continue for the rest of your life. In the time that we live in, you will continue to come out for the rest of your life. But the more you do that, the more you tell that story, the more you're open about it, the more you're honest about it, the better it is for all of us.
Well, the stronger we get.
Absolutely. Like, the more of us, and we are, once again, we are quite literally everywhere. It's just, I know a lot of us are scared. I am not going to lie. Before I actually came out, the day when I was driving up to go, you know, have the conversation with my parents, I thought I was going to have a panic attack. I was terrified. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know how they were going to react. Were they going to throw me out of the house? Was I ever going to speak to them again? You know? And thankfully,
and
it didn't turn out like that. Exactly. It's horrible that, like, just for doing no more than questioning something that should be questioned, something that intertwines itself in so many people's lives and has caused so much harm, not just in the past. Like, let's forget the Crusades and the
mm-hmm.
witch burnings. Let's talk about present day and the Catholic Church. You know,
in Rwanda.
Let's talk about Rwanda. Let's talk about Uganda today, where they're
yes.
hunting down homosexuals because a man who couldn't get his rhetoric heard stateside decided to go infect a country in Africa that was already war-torn and in extreme poverty. He took that message of extreme hate, pulled out of Leviticus, and people died, and people are still dying, and people are still being jailed. So it's not just in the past.
Well, I know people are dying because of the Catholic Church's stance on condoms. It seems like the Pope likes condoms better than either. Or likes AIDS better than he likes condoms. I mean, you know, that's killing people. Those decisions are changing people. The suicides, you know, this is just naming a few of the things, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, this is an ongoing, across-the-board issue, and it isn't just one religion or another. It's all religions. You know, And I hear people talk about, well, what about the moderate ones, you know? They're not causing any crap. That's just nonsense, you know? They may be cherry-picking, ignoring the scriptures and the teachings and the edicts and that are in the holy texts. Holy, I love that word. Holy means don't tread on this, which is ridiculous because we should be able to challenge everything and anything, and religion should not be an exception. But I'm getting off base here. But you know, all these medium people, if you want to call them, are those that are you call them average people. All of them are just as guilty, just because they're cherry picking the things that they don't want to follow or this, that, and the other thing, doesn't mean that they're not just as culpable. That's my little soapbox.
Well, that's the problem with moderates, is that they create a nice little pocket of legitimacy for the extremists.
Mm-hmm.
They create this sort of gray area where we don't go.
And then they don't call them out. They don't, you know, they may say, oh, they don't represent us, you know. The mainstream, I've got friends that are devout Christians and such, and they don't call out the fundamentalists. They don't call up, they get offended when they hear my rhetoric, I mean, they'll join in the offense, and they'll you know, and they'll take that offense and make it a community wise, but they won't take the responsibility for what the outer edges of their religions do. And the truth of the matter is, the fundamentalists are really following the books. You know, they're the ones that are really following every stinking little word in there. And
that's the crazy thing, right?
Yep. It's there for anybody to see. I mean, I have the new international version of the Bible. I mean, I've got written ones, but I got it on audio. I've got the Quran on audio, and I've got the Book of Mormon on audio. And I'll guarantee you that we atheists study more of their holy books than they do.
Oh, absolutely. I actually, my degree, I have a bachelor's degree from a Tennessee college here, Austin Peay in Clarksville. And my bachelor's degree is in philosophy, but one of my concentrations was actually religious studies. I have more Bibles than I really should have as an atheist, I'll be honest with you. I've got a couple of copies of the Quran. I've got a couple of copies of the Book of Mormon. I've got Vedas from Zarathustra. I've got Hadith, you know, the sort of additional writings that go along with the Quran. I've got the Bhagavad Gita, or at least selected writings. I've got tons of it, and it's all the same stuff.
Yes.
Effectively, it's the same story over and over again, told with the little cultural tweaks and the social mores and the taboos of the time. But it is essentially all the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think that's one of the things that gave me, I guess, a little bit more confidence in where I landed with my atheism, is that once I started studying all the other religions, it was like, okay, mine wasn't the only one that was full of crap. Okay, good. I'm glad we got there. So, but I mean, that's one of the things that you learn when you start studying it more, is that they sound eerily alike.
Mm-hmm. Well, they all came from the same basic ones. I mean, in their areas. And they all have some of the same basic stories, same basic tenets, some of the philosophy came across, and this from people that travel from one culture to another, bring those things, and then they adopt them, and that's why there's a thin line, like you said, of a recognizable theme, because they all came from the same basic ones.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that you start finding out when you start digging into the stuff that came before, like the stuff before Christianity, the stuff before Judaism as we know it, the stuff before Islam as we know it, when you start digging into religions like Zoroastrianism and
Mythos.
Learning about how they were looking for a virgin-born savior way back before the Christians even thought it up. And then you start digging into, say, the proto-Jewish tradition, where it was back before it was a monotheism, it was a henotheism. With, yes, there was Yahweh, the one God, but then there were all these other little gods who, if you pay attention, going through the translations and the different versions of the stories, these gods, tons of them end up in the Catholic Church as angels,
right,
and in some cases saints. So you have effectively, you just transpose the story onto a different culture. And it's so similar. And that's another thing. Once you start digging far enough back, even into mythology, when you go into ancient Babylonian and Sumerian mythology, when you go into even Greek mythology, you can see parallels,
right,
of the stuff, especially in Christianity, because Christianity is technically a mystery faith. You know, like where it sprang up, when it sprang up, in the area that it sprang up from, there were tons of mystery faiths running around, like these little mystery cults. And Christianity,
right,
just happens to be one of the ones that survived.
Yes, and it's the damnation part that made it so powerful. You know, love me or burn in hell, you know, or obey or burn in hell, or, you know, whatever, or burn in hell. And at the time, people, you know, believed that. They bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, because it fit their narrative in those days. You know, what
well,
you were talking about.
Well, unfortunately, fear is a... It drives us all at some point in time in
right,
our lives,
right.
And it's a very powerful force. It's a very powerful emotion to overcome.
Yeah, and then the other part of death being so final, that's another fear too. They wanted to believe that there was something in the there's an afterlife, and that there's another life to live, and I think that's what drove all this to begin with, is humans' relationship with death, and the fear of it, and the being unknown and wanting to have some kind of power or control in your life. I mean, when people pray, they feel like they got some kind of power or control, even though we know they're just talking to themselves. And...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hello? Yeah. What was that? But, you know, I mean, like you said, the internet has really not only brought us together, but it's brought information to us, right? I mean, now we can see the other ways of thinking. We can hear other people's views. The worst thing for religion is knowledge, and that's why science and religion are incompatible. Science is the enemy of religion.
Absolutely. Knowledge is like poison, is really what it comes down to. Because it can't hold up to it. It really can't. We've developed too many ways to call people out on this. And I think one of the good things that's kind of come out of our materialistic society is the fact that people, more and more, they want real answers. They want real answers, and they want something that's going to work, at least in, you know, the foreseeable future. So we've gotten to a point in our society where it's turning to where people are not so satisfied with the, don't worry about it, you'll get it later. Like they're not satisfied with putting their lives on layaway effectively, and that's really good thing to go along with how many people are just naturally inquisitive about this type of stuff.
Yeah, and we all got to support each other too. Like I have a friend, and he's got a. It's a Twitter site. It's called Think, THINK, and it's Think the Book. And what they do is they make memes, but these are like cartoons. They're really, really good. And they hit on some of the topics we're talking about, and they hit on a lot of other things too, with social injustices, which many of us atheists are, you know, are deeply involved with. And giving them a little plug here, and they have a Kickstarter site open, and it's kickstarter.com/projects/76855. And hang on. Come on, computer. Oh, yeah. And just as much, okay, I'm sorry, 67855-1473. But if you go to their Twitter site, you know, you can click on the link and everything. But just as them, I mean, there's, I guess what I'm saying is there's people involved with groups such as yours. There's people like me that are running these talk shows and blogs. And then there's people like him, which are doing it in a different area with the memes and with the cartoons and that tell our stories for us. So, you know, what the big deal to me is, too, is that we all need to join together and bond together in some way, shape, or form. I mean, the only way we're going to change anything is through legislation. And if we don't get on, I mean, atheism is just a non-belief in God, period, nothing else. Everything else is personal. So there's atheists that are liberal. There's atheists that I ran into one conservative atheist, and there's libertarian atheists. So, I mean, we're all on a different scales, but we're all atheists, and we got to start getting somebody elected. Don't you think?
Well, see, the thing is like, and don't get me wrong. I understand that there's a myriad of different people in this movement. However, there's a fair amount of overlap. There is a
right.
There's a lot of damn overlap when it comes to atheists. Like when you start talking humanism, skepticism, free thought, atheist, secular, there's a ton of overlap in all of those communities. And honestly, I've kind of gotten sick of the, oh, it's like herding cats excuse. Because
mm-hmm.
we're not cats, all right? We
right.
might be a wild band of monkeys, but we're not cats. And there's
mm-hmm.
a whole lot more that we have in common, and there's a whole lot more that we are all concerned about across the board than I think we like to admit a lot of the time. Because we've spent a lot of our lives separating ourselves and distancing ourselves from groups. And it's made us gun-shy a lot of the time to be involved in a group, especially a group that could be called a movement.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, a lot of this stuff affects all of us, regardless of whether or not you're right-wing or left-wing, if you're a crazy liberal socialist like me, or you're anarcho-capitalist like my buddy Adam. You know, it doesn't matter. There's a ton of overlap for us. And there's a lot to be said for trying to make things better for everybody, which necessitates that we band together and that we make friendships and contacts, we network, and we keep those lines of communication open. Because
mm-hmm.
the more people we have involved, the stronger we are. And we're honestly, we are better together than we ever are on our own. That goes for humans in general. But, man, when you get the atheist community together, we can do some amazing stuff. We really can. And that's why I'm involved.
Yeah, there's power and safety in numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I'm just getting used to this this format, this blog, I mean this podcast and such. And we have chats available on here that I think you can access through the site, and you can call in with the number I've been shooting out there while we've been talking. We're almost over with this, but hopefully next week we'll get some call-ins on this. I really enjoyed this this conversation, and I really appreciate what you do and the information that you provided. I hope there's others out there that can utilize it and give you a call, or you know, or tap you on the shoulder on Twitter and find out more about it in your area.
I accept friend requests from just about anybody on Facebook. So look me up, Sarah Harrison, like Harrison Ford, Sarah Harrison Green. Yes, that is my middle name. Look me up, friend me, drop me a message, hit me up on Twitter. I love talking to people, and if I can't get you involved here with me, I've got a ton of people, a huge network of people all over the country that even if you're listening to this somewhere out in the middle of Oregon, I can probably find you a contact. And we want as many people to come and be involved as possible. We've got a spot for everybody, and we literally need everybody. So everybody's welcome to reach out to me.
Cool beans.
And thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, you'll just be blowing up after this.
Yeah, we'll be doing the deal. I'm sure we're going to have you on again. I could tell you we are. Got to network as much as possible. Like you said, there's a lot of overlap, and it's just a matter of finding that overlap. You know, I'm still dead set on trying to get some atheist politicians elected. We finally have a person in Washington that's lobbying for us through Richard Dawkins Society and through the Secular Now. What is it? Secular?
Are you talking about the Secular Coalition for America? The SCA?
No. I'm talking about, I can't think, Richard Dawkins. And, whatever.
I'm trying to Google it, but my fingers are not working quickly enough.
It's all right. My brain's not working, which is a pretty steady
it's
thing
for me. It's the end of the show. It cannot be expected to work, sir.
It's all right. I'll get it back. But anyway, we have a lobbyist, finally, in Washington lobbying for the atheist community, and that's a start. But when you got one lobbyist and there's, you know, 50 for one company and 50 for another and for this and for that, just gets drawn into it.